It's about to go down.
Let's get into it. Welcome to JavaScript Jam, y'all.
Hey, yo.
The podcast. Welcome. All right. What's up?
Am I supposed to say something to you? Like,
sure. Hey-o. Do it, yes.
All right.
Oh, that was good.
That was all I got.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to JavaScript Jam. We got with us Nick Taylor, also known as Nicky T Online. What's up, man?
Not too much. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
We're doing good, man. Yeah. You are a very good friend from the Netlify, and you are here at RemixConf. You want to let our listeners know a little bit of who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So like you said, I'm currently working at Netlify. I recently celebrated my 1 year anniversary there. I'm rolling into 1 year and 2 months now, I think. And I work on like the larger team called Ecosystem. And the minier team, we typically call them pods at work. I'm on the frameworks team. So basically my job and the job of my team is to make sure that whatever you're deploying there, like whether it's Next.js, Remix, shout out Remix. That was a terrible soundbite. Sorry, people. Basically my job is to make sure that whatever you're deploying works in terms of like the framework aspect. Obviously, there's a lot of teams that make Netlify work, but our focus really is the framework aspect at the build time and also at runtime to some degree in terms of like wiring up serverless and Edge. So
that sounds like my dream job. The idea that you could be hired to work on frameworks specifically is just so cool. So how did you find yourself in that role specifically?
Yeah, it just kind of came up one evening. So I used to work at dev.2, which is,
and hey,
I still love dev2. I blog there still, and I have my own, I pull in all my blog posts from there to my own blog. But there was some, you know, dev2 is a Rails monolith, and I was leading front end over there, and we were doing some cool stuff. We were using Preact, and we were doing kind of bespoke islands architecture. You know, it was a lot of fun there, but I kind of realized that there were some things that I would never do there just based on the tech stack. Like, wouldn't really do anything serverless related. Edge was something new to me at the time. So I wouldn't be touching any of those things.
Where did it run?
So dev2 itself, because there's Forum, the company. Mm-hmm. Forum, there's cloud hosting that that they provide that you can pay for as a client. But dev2 itself, which is a Forum instance, at least at the time when I was still there, it was on Heroku.
And wow. Deep cut.
Yeah. So Git push. I mean, it'd been working well for there over there. So I don't know if there was any reason to move, if at all. But
most people moved off of Heroku because they weren't able to do it for free anymore.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine they were on a free instance.
No. We're definitely not on that. Dev2 definitely wasn't on a free instance. It's a very large site. It's heavily content-based. There's a whole caching layer. We're using Fastly, I believe. And there's a lot of pieces there. But like Heroku, and these aren't decisions I made because I was focusing mainly on the front end. But
I know you also found your way there because you were doing some open source stuff. And they kind of like saw you and were like, hey, come on over here.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been contributing to open source since about... I think my first PR, I've talked about this on some open source Twitter spaces, and I've mentioned before, but there's this website called firstpr.me. And if you go to that site, you can literally look up anybody's GitHub handle and you can see their literal first pull request.
Oh, yeah. I heard him talk about that before, too. Yeah.
Mine was for Blitz.js. I think a lot of people probably wouldn't expect.
Yeah, no, that's cool. My first pull request was to a repository called Push Pickup, which was a Meteor application. So for folks who've been in the space...
Even deeper cut.
So Meteor was like a... at the time it was called Universal JavaScript.
Well, they called it isomorphic, I believe.
Yeah, there's many names. And then, you know, the whole concept of optimistic rendering as well in there, and it was like full stack JavaScript. Anyways, this particular project, I didn't know anything about Meteor, and they were actually saying, hey, well, we need somebody, and I was like, yeah, sure, I can do it. And like, not really knowing any Meteor. I mean, I was comfortable in JavaScript, but anyways, that kind of started my open source journey. Not to sound too cheesy, but fast forward to 2018. So Dev2 was originally closed source, and then at one point they put out a blog post on Dev2 saying, we're considering open sourcing the project and we're looking for people to contribute to the project. So I filled out the Google form. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm interested. And so I got accepted and I was the first external contributor to the code base, and I was still working in it when it was closed source. But once they did open source it in, I believe it was August 2018, like all those commits we'd done, they just came because it all went public. Dev2 is where I like to blog. I really like the project. That's why I started contributing to it.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask, are you someone who's like very passionate about blogging?
Not necessarily passionate about blogging. Like even now, I wouldn't say I'm like a prolific blogger. I do blog, but...
a weekly newsletter. YOLO.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I stream more on Twitch than blog, but I can drop a link in the show notes if you want after for that. But... I did like blogging, but like I said, it's not something I did all the time, but I just liked the project on Dev2, and so I just contributed to it, and I kept contributing it for a good solid 2 years, and then I think it was, when was it? Yeah, it was like 2019. I was interviewing, and I was mutuals with all the founders of Dev2 on Twitter, and I happened to be interviewing at Facebook, and it didn't work out, which is fine. But
I cannot imagine you at Facebook. That would have been weird.
But it was a cool experience regardless. Like I got flown down to California and stuff. And then Peter, who's one of the founders, he saw me tweet something like awesome day. For some reason, he thought I was referring to rugby, because for folks that don't know me, I played rugby for many years. So
the other day I thought you did hockey. It was rugby is what you did.
Yeah, no, I am like the worst Canadian. I can barely skate. I've been to I'm in Montreal, which is hockey town. I've literally been to one Montreal Canadiens game. So like anyways.
Is that where you grew up in Montreal?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was there my whole life. Aside from university, which I went to out of province. So I went to the Maritimes in Canada, in New Brunswick, which was great. But yeah, he thought I was talking about like some international rugby match, like my favorite team or something. And even though I did play rugby a lot and I was big into sports, I'm not like a sports fanatic per se, and I'm not that person that'll be sitting at the bar with you rattling off 10 million stats about somebody. Like, that's the last thing I want to be doing. But anyways, I was like, no, it's not rugby or whatever. I showed him like the Facebook badge, like minus some information on it. And he's like, oh, cool. And then like a week later, I was like, oh, well, in the end, didn't pan out. And then he's like, oh, by the way, we're hiring. Mm. And I didn't have to really interview with him. Like, I mean, the technical aspect, at least. Like, I'd literally been doing a lot of their front end for about 2 years.
And that's a huge reason why you'd want to do open source, is because you can prove yourself without having to do something like that.
Exactly. And I do want to give the caveat that, like, if you contribute to open source, I'm not going to guarantee that you're going to get hired. Right. But it is definitely a great way, especially if you're new in tech or you just don't have that professional experience. Yeah. And like, we can go on a whole tangent.
I would say I can guarantee you will be more likely to get a job than if you don't do open source.
And it's like, you know, like coming to events and you're networking and things like that with people, right? Like, this is a social aspect of it, right?
Yeah.
And then that's like technical networking. That's what I would like to call it.
Yeah.
Tech networking?
Tech
networking.
Yeah.
Tech working?
Oh, shoot. We just came up with something. Yo. All
right. But yeah, and I do hate's a strong word, I should say. I don't really like the term networking because I associate it with not good connotations. But like for me, but
it sounds transactional.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, but it is networking. You know, like, and I just like
relationship building.
Yeah, you know, like what I guess whatever the least cheesy way you want to say it, you know. But I love hanging out with people, and it's
same.
You know, it's just a great way, and like open source. Like Anthony was saying, it's like not only is your code all public so people can literally see it, but they also, I think the code really, it is important to some degree because, like, obviously you're trying to fix it.
Shows you can work in a team.
Exactly.
You work with others.
True.
And the other aspect of it is it, not only is it working with a team, but with all everybody who wants to work remote who might not be working remote right now, a huge aspect of open source and working remotely is being able to communicate asynchronously. You know, so that means documenting a lot of things. So that means, like, if you open up an issue, you know, give as much context as you can about something. Same thing with a pull request.
Because, yeah, didn't you just have a new article or something on issues?
Oh, and it's not my article.
I think Becca, like, linked to something or something, didn't she?
Yeah, my good friend Becca HW, she works at OpenSauce now, which shout out to OpenSauce. It's a great project. I always point people
first
to
first Discord I ever joined many years ago.
Oh, yeah? Cool. Yeah, no, Becca's running I'm trying to remember what her official role is there, but I think it's leading DevRel there. I'm not positive, but
it's been a few months now, right?
Yeah,
she's leading, like, the community efforts essentially, I think.
Yeah, and then, like,
she's doing, like, weekly calls and stuff like that.
Yeah, she runs the Twitter Spaces, and she's doing a lot of blogging for them. And
she'd be someone we should get on, actually.
You totally. Should definitely get her on. Yes, so she wrote a great post about creating a first issue. She just happened to use an issue I wrote.
That's what it was. Okay.
Which actually fits in very conveniently to the fact we're at RemixConf, because it was an issue in the Remix repository about pretty much when I started working at Netlify. Oh. And don't need to go into the details too much, but I basically gave a pretty good detailed explanation of the issue, and then I dug even further because I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I didn't end up fixing it, but I gave enough context and debugging information for one of the core team members to actually sort it out. And
totally.
TLDR, they were using a fetch polyfill library, because if you're deploying to the edge, it's using something like on Netlify, it's Dino. If you're on, like, Vercel or Cloudflare, it's Cloudflare. Mm. And over there, fetch is native. But in Node land, fetch, even a year and a half ago,
you're
wasn't using native.
Node fetch.
Yeah.
Isomorphic fetch, technically, I think is supposed to be compatible. Most people weren't using that one.
Yeah, they weren't using Node fetch. I'm trying to remember which one it was. But basically, there was something slightly non-standard about it that caused this bug. And again, I'm not going to go into the issue a ton. I can link it into the...
Yeah, I already grabbed the link for it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. But yeah, so yeah, no, I felt pretty cool that she used my issue for that. So
that's awesome.
But yeah, and just
I saw that today. It was so funny.
Yeah,
perfect timing.
No, yeah, I just want to give her a shout out. I think she's doing really great work over there at OpenSauce. Oh, yeah. So
totally.
But yeah, so I know we kind of went a bit on a tangent there, but, like, yeah, basically contributing to open source is how I got my job at Dev2. The actual interview was really just me meeting the team and seeing if, like, hey, can we work together, kind of thing, you know? And it was my dream job.
You're rocking the dev shirt right
now.
Oh,
yeah, I am. Yeah. Totally unintentional. We're talking about Remix. I got dev gear on. I've got a Remix fanny pack here.
Yes.
But no, it was my dream job, you know, working in open source and getting paid. To me, that's, like, amazing. And I'm, you know, now Netlify is my dream job. You know, hopefully, I mean, not that I plan on leaving Netlify, but, like, hopefully every job I go to from now on, it becomes my next dream job.
That would be, yeah.
It's a hard one to jump from.
Yeah, no, exactly. But yeah, at Netlify, like I said, I'm working on frameworks, but pretty much, I'd say probably 99% of the work I do is open source. So, like, all the things we're doing, it's publicly available, including the Remix work. I created the adapters for the Remix integration with Netlify. I mean, it definitely had assistance from the Remix team and also, like, coworkers. I just want to give a shout out to Matt Kane, because he kind of gave me a bit of a hand at the beginning there.
Gatsby.
Yeah, yeah. Matt used to work at Gatsby. Netlify has acquired Gatsby, so now we have more Gatsby.
We actually had Matt Billman on one of our spaces to talk about that back when it happened.
Okay, yeah. I think that I think I listened to that one. That was with Ryan Carniato as well, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They were both on there.
Yeah. No, that's a good space. Yeah, no, I always love those spaces. I was telling Anthony yesterday that
it fits right into your schedule.
I'm streaming twice a week now, but. Mm-hmm. My main streaming is on Wednesdays, and it's at 5 p.m. UTC. And then basically I get off my stream, and then
you
like
know you're a streamer when you're thinking in UTC.
Yeah, well, it's also just something in terms of working remotely.
Yeah.
Because like half my there's a few I work on my team currently. Like there's like Zach Leatherman who created 11D and my other coworker. Why am I drawing a blank right now? Tatiana. And then the rest are in the UK or like other parts of Europe. So, so basically, you know, in Slack, whenever you say, "Hey, I'm stepping out" or whatever, it's like, if I say Eastern time, they can figure it out, but it's just kind of more helpful to just give a UTC time. And a little pro tip. You can get, there's a few apps for it, but you can get Mac apps that can give multiple times. So I have like my Eastern time and my UTC time. So whenever,
nice.
You know, instead of me always having to calculate it in my head, which it's not complex, but I can just look up at my.
Another pro tip.
Yeah.
Inside of if you use Google Workspaces.
Okay.
On Google Calendar, you can add whatever.
Oh, no way.
Different time zones on the left-hand side.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's also a way in Discord to give someone's native time, so you just say I don't know exactly how to do it. You can Google
right.
But it'll like display as whatever someone's time is based on their own computer.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like I'm supposed to give another pro tip over all of your pro tips. Now it's like
I got a pro tip, bro. Yeah.
We're just gonna keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, another pro tip, by the way.
Yeah. The real pro tip is we all just agree on one single time and stop using time zones.
5 UTC.
Yeah.
Or UTC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just say 5. That's it. That's all. We're one number. That's it. That's all we got for time.
Five what? Five.
Yeah. So
we got way off the rails, but
it's okay.
I appreciate you coming into the spaces and just like hanging out, and we've brought you up on stage a couple times.
Totally.
So really appreciate that. So I'd be curious, since you work on frameworks, what's your favorite framework, and why do all of the others suck in comparison?
So that's like trying to ask a parent like who's your favorite child. That's a question you should never answer. You know,
that's why I asked it.
I could give it a very ambiguous one. You know, the best one is the one I would
pick. Of course. Okay, so solid, cool.
But it's the funny thing about working on frameworks is because like when I was working at Dev2, I was doing front end, so like we were using Preact, and I used other frameworks before that. Like I've used Next.js before and all that, but like in my day-to-day, I'm not building stuff with a framework. I'm making sure the framework works, so it's very different. But having front-end knowledge is definitely helpful.
So I guess, like, aside from Remix, what are some other frameworks you have worked heavily on?
Yeah. I find Remix super interesting. Do you mean that I've worked on at Netlify?
Right, yeah.
Now? Okay, yeah. We've worked a bunch on the next runtime, so that's like a...
Yeah, I know Netlify has put a lot of work into trying to have really like first-class next support, obviously, because they want to compete with Vercel.
Yeah, yeah, and like I don't really want to talk about
we won't get into that
competition or anything, but like basically, it definitely is interesting because most frameworks have an adapter pattern, so. Astro has this, Remix has Svelte this,
kit.
Svelte, yeah. If you're using anything with Nitro, which comes from the Vite world, Nitro, like for example in Nux.js, they basically...
Nitro's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, good integration for Edgio.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It basically handles the like, you know, okay, I'm going to go deploy this. It just knows where you're going to deploy for like the main ones. Like obviously if, I don't know, say you're a smaller pass... potentially, or maybe even like just some obscure deployment place, you can do your custom stuff. But Nitro is a great way. So like, if you work in the Vite ecosystem, you can benefit from that. So I think that's super cool. For the next runtime, they don't have an adapter. There's different ways you can deploy Next.js. So, but basically, we call it the next runtime. And so like basically. A lot of what you do with frameworks is just making sure that it works with whatever you're using for serverless and edge. Like I'm kind of oversimplifying things, but that's kind
of. You
want to
make sure it like baseline will run on the platform. And then the next level is actually making sure that all its bells and whistles and fancy features work, like your ISR and your stuff like that.
Yeah. And there's some neat stuff that's in the with the next runtime. We have like advanced middleware as well, which is kind of cool. So you can manipulate the markup as it's coming down. You can change props and stuff. So this can also potentially prevent hydration errors. Like, for example, say you wanted to have personalization. And so like, say you have a component that, I don't know, we'll go back to time, you know, because we were talking about time a lot, you know. Time. So like, I don't know, maybe the prop is showing, I don't know, it's going to render client side as 5 p.m. UTC, but I'm in Eastern time. So like, I want to show users who have Eastern time, you know, like let's show them the time in their time format and in their particular time zone. And you can do this on the client side. The problem is, though, is that you would get this flash because you would end up seeing like 5 p.m. UTC. And depending on how fast your internet is,
right,
you might, even with fast internet, you'd probably see a little blip where it just kind of morphs into this other time. Mm-hmm. So with the Next.js advanced middleware, you can change the time on the server side based on some contextual information, like the time, like, because you have access to the time zone and stuff, because it's edge, if you're working on the edge,
right, because they're pulling from a certain area.
Yeah, exactly. So you can get the time zone, you can get like geolocation information and so on. So with the Next.js advanced middleware, you can change that markup server side to say it's 1 p.m. Eastern time, not the 5 p.m. UTC that might be stored there. And like, and then not only that, you can also change the props that get rendered, because if for anybody that's worked in React since, I believe, React 18, you'll get this message saying hydration error, the markup doesn't match. And so it's, you know, an interesting way to handle that. And you can do other kinds of personalization and stuff. But talking about like favorite frameworks, I'm not going to say I have a favorite framework, but 11D is really amazing for static site generation. It's what my blog's currently using. I did kind of get nerd sniped into migrating my blog to Astro. And
I remember you saying something about that. 11D and Astro are like,
yeah, it's very hard to disambiguate the two. You talk about one, you got to talk about the other. Yeah.
And 11D is an amazing project. And they have a concept of collections, and Astro has this too. And I don't know if they took inspiration from 11D or not, but with Astro,
I would imagine.
Yeah. And with Astro, they've got TypeScript in there, and I'm a big fan of TypeScript. I'm also a big fan of JSX. You don't have, as far as I know, maybe there's a plugin, but in 11D, my mine's all built with
Nginx. You'd have to use Slinkity
if
you wanted to get JSX, and Slinkity is a bit of a dead project now. But yeah, me and Ben Holmes, or mostly Ben Holmes and me, kind of just cheering him on and writing blog posts, was trying to get a JSX thing to work with 11D. That was the whole point of Slinkity.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that, because when I was working at Dev2, I had Ben Holmes on, and he talked about Slinkity.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating project. I kind of wish he stuck with it.
Yeah, and getting back to, I'm going to go on a tangent again, but like in terms of what we were saying about like you can get a job if by contributing open source, I'm almost 100% certain like that was one of the main, probably the main reason that Ben, because Ben Holmes works at Astro now.
Oh, absolutely.
And so basically all that work he did in 11D, I think they saw that like Fred or whoever else on the team were like, oh, we gotta get, you know, Ben on the team.
And I had been telling him at the time, because me and him obviously were talking throughout that whole process, and I was like, you should really open source this, you should really do this, because even if it doesn't go anywhere, the experience you're gonna get and the exposure you're gonna get is gonna be so worth it. And it like really ended up paying off for him.
Yeah. And so getting back to Astro, you know, because I follow what all the frameworks are doing. It's in my best interest too for the work I do. Astro released typed collections. So basically they're using Zod. You can create schemas and then you can strongly type your content.
I'm in the process of migrating my blog from Astro 1 to Astro 2 specifically to incorporate this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a Friday night and I was just like, oh, this sounds interesting. Let me go take a peek at it. And so, you know, I was just like, okay, I have a bunch of markdown in my existing site, obviously, for my blog post. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to pull some in and into like just a bare bones Astro site. And I just wanted to kind of mess around with the strongly typed, is it content collections they call it? I forget what they call it. It is content collections. Yeah. So I got that working. And then I was just like, okay, well, you know, I'd done a stream on Astro with Ben before, and I was like, oh, well, let me just see if I pull in like a nunchuck template, because the nunchuck templates are pretty much HTML with some squiggly brackets for like wherever you're gonna inject stuff. Like
Liquid or any of those other templating languages that we all love so much, allegedly.
Yeah, so I just pulled in some things. I like, okay, so I created an Astro component, and then basically I just started converting my whole blog just because I was just curious. And then it's not finished because there's some rough edges I need to sort out in terms of some things, but I found it really easy to work with Astro because, and I haven't done anything interactive yet. It's literally been just all Astro components. And, you know, I think they took some good cues from JSX because it's not JSX. It's an Astro file.
You use .astro components unless you want to actually write React itself, and then you can write JSX. So it's kind of up to you whether you want to do one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. But And I'm not positive, but like, because I know you can go with the Islands architecture, and that's when you pull in a framework to do the client side stuff. But I'm not sure, in the context of Astro, if you can actually use React on to server side render.
Yeah, that's a good question. We would need someone from the Astro team to answer that one.
I'm pretty sure it's just Astro components, at least right now. And yeah. So, anyways, it's an Astro file. You know, it has. Yeah, I mean, HTML, I mean, JSX pretty much looks like HTML. It's not HTML, I know, but Astro has the concept of props, just like you do in React. So, like,
that's what I love about using it, is that you can write these Astro components and you almost don't even realize you're not using React or one of these component frameworks.
Exactly, yeah. You know, so, like, you know, I pulled out some markup out of the Nunchuck templates in my 11D blog, and then I was like, okay, Astro has astro.props, so, like, boom, you know, if you've done JSX and React, it's like a pretty natural progression. So I'm probably going to finish migrating my blog. Because there's just things
and
I like.
Your blog is?
Oh, yeah. IamDeveloper.com if folks want to check it out. We can drop all that in the show notes if you want. Thank you for the shout out. But yeah, so I think it's an interesting framework. I'm also, like, I recently gave a talk at Node Congress in Berlin. I was remote. I couldn't make it to Berlin, but I gave a talk on Fresh, which is a full-stack web framework for Dino.
Yeah, what's been the thing that's made you excited about Fresh? Because I remember you did a stream with them also, and you've been kind of pushing this as one of, like, the cooler frameworks to get into. And I think Fresh is very – we had a great conversation with Luca from Fresh a long time ago.
Yeah. Luca's who I spoke to as well, and he also explained some things about Dino because there was some misconceptions I had. Like, I didn't understand what they were doing to convert TypeScript on the servers on the server because they don't bundle anything. There's no build step, and we can kind of talk about that. But I think Fresh is interesting. As far as I know, right now you can only deploy it to Dino deploy. I did it even though Netlify uses Dino. It's not exactly the same as going to Dino deploy directly.
That's interesting.
You know, and that's not throwing shade on anybody. That's just
you could probably run it in a Docker container.
But so I did try to get it working to deploy on Netlify, but like you know, I have other priorities, and like, you know, I can't just say, hey, I'm gonna go tinker on this for a month. And but I really like a lot of stuff in the Fresh framework. You know, it's kind of like the story you're hearing from a lot of frameworks, like SSR, server-side rendering is
and
like...
Islands.
Yeah, it's like the new hotness. But the thing is, for people who have been doing web development for a long time, like I started doing web dev in the late 90s, you know, server-side rendering is how everything worked before. And then there was this swing where...
Quick shout out. Had you on my stream talking about SSR.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We went through like the whole, we did this whole topic. So we'll drop that also in the show notes.
Yeah, and that was kind of funny because we did it with Astro, even though I hadn't really used any Astro. And then I was showing people how you could debug the server side code. And then, it was fun. But yeah, like web dev, it was always used to be like people make fun of PHP, even though like, people using PHP and Laravel are doing pretty fine.
I'm literally having that argument on Twitter today. Right, yeah, because yeah. Adam, Adam.dev is, he tried it and he was like, wait a second, Laravel's awesome.
Yeah. No, I've never used Laravel. Like I did, the last time I used PHP was PHP 5, which is a long, long time ago. But I did, like back in the day, I was using LampStack or WAMP, which Windows, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. LAMP if you're on Linux, and
XAMPP.
Yeah, XAMPP. And then there's also MAMP, which is Mac, Apache, MySQL, PHP. Basically, people just like making acronyms.
That was the most out of control acronyming of all time with all of those.
Yeah, it made me laugh. But
well, you know, that real quick side note. I mean, that's why T3 is what it is, because it's no acronym, right? It's just like.
T3 is a bit of a throws you for a curveball. T3 stands for Theo.
Right.
Doesn't stand for TypeScript Tailwind and TRPC, which is what you would be led to believe if you were a logical person who could think of how these things work.
Yes. But that way he didn't have to keep renaming it when they changed their stack.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. But so server-side rendering is super popular now. Like all the frameworks or most frameworks are, if they haven't done it yet, they're moving to it, including
Redwood.
Yeah, exactly. We were talking about this yesterday. I think Redwood's got it support for it on, I think it's currently on fly.io only, I think, right now. I'm not positive about that. I forget where I saw it. I think just in my Twitter
feed.
Yeah,
we're getting there. We're slowly but surely. Redwood will support SSR. I remember we had someone open and it was like maybe like one of the first 10 issues on the entire GitHub for it was, hey, when are you going to support SSR?
Yeah,
and
here
we are like 3 years later. Like, we almost have it ready.
No, that's cool. That's cool. But it's like, you know, everything moved to client-side rendering only, and like there was a shift because like in the late 90s and even early 2000s, broadband internet was not a big thing yet. Like when I was doing web dev initially, I was on dial-up. You know, it's like, you know, the
dial-up.
If you watch like a 90s movie, you know, like, Mom, get off the phone, I'm trying to check email.
Yeah, you can actually use the internet and answer your phone at the same time.
Yeah. We had Netscape at the house.
Yeah. so I think, you know, then there was other stuff like Java apps, and we can put a pit in this because I could probably talk forever about it. But basically, you know, I think the fact that broadband wasn't there yet, people were like, or it slowly became available, you know, people would be like, sites are taking too long. Like I literally used to have to change Gmail to HTML mode. And if you don't know, Gmail has an HTML mode if it takes too long to load the page. And so picture somebody who has a site or even an app back in those days, whatever you would consider an app, you'd be like, people can't see me moving my hands, but it's like chunk, chunk, chunk. You see the site loading. And so like, if you could load like a minimal amount of the site and then you'd have Ajax, which is what most people call fetch these days. But basically, people are like, okay, well, we can get the page to load fast, and then we'll just pull down what else we need. And that's when you start getting skeleton stuff on, like loading screens and so on. And then we kind of went full tilt building applications, just only client side. And there's definitely use cases for that for sure. But if you're building a website, like a blog shouldn't be a client side rendered app, you know, because there's other implications like SEO and all that stuff.
Right.
But now that like internet is pretty good, you like obviously some people still don't have the best internet, but it's like all of a sudden, like it's not even a pendulum swing. It's when I was talking to Chance, I met Chance Strickland, who used to be on the Remix team. He just happened to be in Montreal 1 week, and we grabbed some lunch and stuff. And I was saying, yeah, it's like the pendulum swing again. He's like, it's not really the pendulum swing. It's more like it's kind of more circular. Like you're kind of slowly finding that, you know, like there's those metal balls you drop in.
I think Dan Abramoff actually came up with this. He tweeted this like a couple of years ago. I saw a old reference to that. So I think he might have been the first one to say this.
But yeah, so, but basically we're kind of slowly getting to what is the sweet spot, I guess, you know? And so like,
sure.
And, you know, we've got serverless now. You've got Serverful. And, like, so you can serve all these things pretty well now. And then you can still get a good experience. And then you have stuff like Islands Architecture. You know, you've got the Hydration Story. There's resumability in Qwik, which is a different approach. I haven't really worked with Qwik. I do understand the principles. But
yeah, what's the status of Qwik on Netlify?
It works already.
Yeah, I remember Brittany Postma had a blog post about it, so it's possible. Like,
oh yeah, you can deploy them today. Like, I'm pretty sure my coworker Matt Kane, who's currently not on the Frameworks team, I believe he did that integration, and this was like a year ago. And you know, like we speak to the the Quick team, you know, like the builder folks and stuff. So as far as I know, it works.
Cool. I'd be curious to take it back a step from the technical and just talk a bit about, like, what is your day-to-day like? Like, this is, it seems like you have a job that's so varied and that could involve so many different things, working with these frameworks, working with integrating them, making sure they work well. But, like, what is a day in the life of Nikki T?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the role of the frameworks team is we are engineering. Like, I'm an individual contributor there. But we kind of have a bit of a support role baked into it. And so, essentially, every day can be different. But, you know, we're usually trying to add features to enable frameworks to have better support. But, you know, Netlify has...
Do you have, like, tickets or, like, what is that?
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Yeah, no, we use GitHub. You know, we have GitHub issues and stuff, you know. And the reason why we're probably on GitHub is because a lot of, at least on the frameworks team, at least, most of it is, well, all the framework stuff is open source. You know, obviously Netlify has some proprietary stuff, but for all our work, I can't think of really anything that isn't open source at the moment. So
that's very cool. And this is one of the things I love about Netlify is that they are very big in open source and not just like they put their money where their mouth is in terms of actually open sourcing the stuff.
Yeah. And it's one of the reasons there's, you know, to just go on a slight tangent for a sec, it's one of the reasons why I joined Netlify. The other reason was like, I initially just saw the job posting. I think somebody tweeted out, maybe it was Jason Langsdorff or somebody else at Netlify. And I'd had the privilege to, when I was working at Dev2, to do a stream with Jason Langsdorff, Cassidy Williams, who neither of them work there now, but they're really super cool people, very down to earth. And they basically oozed good vibes to me when I was chatting with both of them. And so, like, obviously two people doesn't represent a company, but to me and Netlify in general, like, because like I'd been deploying stuff there before I was even working there, I don't know, I don't want to say sunshine and rainbows, but like it just good feels.
Like,
and
even me right now as someone who works for a Netlify competitor, I still like love Netlify and will tell everyone it's so great, and because both the people are great, the tech is great. Like, I just think in terms of contributing to the open source world and just, like, making cool tools for developers, like, I got nothing but good things to say about Netlify, really. Like,
thanks for the kind words. But, yeah, like, it's a combination of I got good vibes from – I even did a stream with Ben Hong, who works there, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, basically –
he's their view guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Ben – again, getting back to open source, Ben is a core team member on Vue and Nuxt. Those are probably two big reasons that he's working at Netlify as well. You know, again, just the, there's a common theme here that keeps coming up.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the original question though, like, you know, as far as like, your day to day, like, I think what you just said about Jason and Cassidy. Like they gave you some good vibes, right? When you were doing some things with them, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, the job that you do, that we do,
put good vibes out into the world.
You're the face of the company, essentially, you know, in different areas, right?
Yeah,
so, like, you're the first touch point potentially by someone, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're putting out good vibes, you know, it's good things for the company. So you said two people can't be the company, but it really, you know, that's relationships right there.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. And like I said, Ben Hong as well. They're all awesome people, you know.
And Jason... Cassie don't even work for Netlify anymore.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And Jason, he left. I think it was late fall last year. Jason's doing amazing stuff. He's helping.
He turned Learn with Jason into a company, which is so cool.
Yeah, and then might as well plug him there. Definitely check out learnwithjason.dev. He also works with brands and companies to just make them better. And I forget who I was talking to last night, but somebody was saying, because Netlify did this, not Between Two Ferns, what was the video called? It was like basically kind of showing it was a funny video. It was about 3 minutes and basically kind of showing like a worst case scenario of people trying to just finish a project, deploy it and stuff. And it's like black and white on purpose or dark themed, and then you, there's the happy path, which is obviously using Netlify and stuff, but it's just really well done. And
yeah, I missed this one. We'll have to find that and throw it in the show notes.
Yeah, drop in the show notes. But like that kind of thing, I don't know if like there was a lot of people involved in that, like serious production stuff, but I know Jason, I believe, spearheaded that. I'm not positive, so, but he basically super fun project, and that's kind of the vibes Jason gives off, and that's the kind of thing he's trying to do with companies now, you know, on his own and stuff, and with you know you can see that too on Learn with Jason. He's always having fun and stuff, but getting back to the day-to-day, also we're open source, and like when I worked at Dev2 is open source, and like one of my favorite things to do is interact with the developer community. This is why, even though I'm not like some massive streamer like Primogen or whatever, my lizard brain wants to have tens of thousands of followers, but that's not really why I do it. I honestly do it because I get to meet people and just check out projects. That
I heavily associate you with streaming, because you did the Dev2 stream before this. So you want to talk a little bit about like how you got into streaming and what is, you know, what's it like streaming? Why do you think it's a valuable activity?
Yeah, I know for sure. Yeah. So at Dev2, I started January 2020 there, and Hacktoberfest 2020 came around, and you know, a lot of the team was involved with it, but like kind of the face of it was me and my old coworker Christina Gorton,
from Lambda School. She was a teacher when I was at Lambda School, actually.
Yeah,
I would go back and watch some of her videos trying to understand what the hell was going on.
Yeah, no, Christina's awesome, and if you know, if she's ever on the hunt for a new role, definitely snatch her up super quick. She's for awesome. Sure. Yeah. So this was also like, you know, the first year of our pandemic, you know, and this was lockdown. I was working in open source, obviously. So there's nothing like I needed to hide. And I was just like bored one day. And I did take some I took a lot of inspiration from, like, I watched Jason stream, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start streaming. And I started literally just doing my actual work at Dev2 on stream. Nobody's watching, you know, because like nobody knows I'm even there. So, you know, it was kind of weird initially, you know, like zero people watching as I'm streaming on Twitch. And then I got this idea. I'm like, well, and it's nothing novel, but like, I was like, well, we work in open source, you know, we have people contributing to the code base. Why don't I pair with somebody on my stream? So I did that. And, the first person I streamed with was, I think, is it Sylvia? I'll find it in the show notes. But basically, it didn't necessarily get her first job, but she talked about it during her interview, actually. Really? Yeah.
Awesome.
So, I'm not going to claim I got her the job at all. But like,
it's creating the space for people to have these opportunities.
Yeah.
And this is the same, I think about this the same way with FS Jam or JavaScript Jam, is that just giving people the opportunity to show up and present their work.
Yeah.
Like, that's really valuable, and it can really give someone a platform that they may not have had otherwise.
Yeah. And it comes back to open source again. Mm-hmm. She talked about, this is something I worked on. You know, we converted a preact component. It was a class-based component at the time, and I was just like, oh, why don't we just convert it to a function component? You know,
because, of course.
You know, I'm not saying you should convert your whole code base just for the heck of it, but I was like, this will be a fun thing to do.
Because it's the right thing to do.
So, yes. Yeah, so I did that. You know, I think I set up a schedule. I just put a blog post up on Dev2 saying, hey, if you want to come on the stream and pair, I'll like help you get set up with Dev2 on your machine, and then like you can work on it. And I was doing, I think, maybe one every 2 weeks, and then, you know, it was summer, so I was on vacation for a bit. But then Hacktoberfest rolled around, and they're like, okay, yeah, so you and Christina will be doing that. And then I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, well, Dev2 has a Twitch handle. It's called The Practical Dev. If you want to check it out, you can check out the past streams. And I don't know if it links to the YouTube, but we can put that in the show notes if not, because Twitch doesn't keep everything on there forever. But I used to put highlights on there. And I was like, well, you use this at once, maybe like for an event, and that's it. I was like, I mentioned that I'd been pairing with people on my own stream. I said, well, why don't we, for Hacktoberfest, just pair like every not I don't know if it was every day. I can't remember how many times we were doing it. It was definitely at least a couple times a week, and that kind of started the dev to Twitch stream. And
I'm just looking at the practical devs YouTube, and it's sad because as soon as you left, there was zero videos. But I'm looking at the recent ones. We got Ben Holmes, we got Demetrius Clark, and we even got me doing Step Zen stuff.
Yeah, I can't remember if it was the last one I did, but I think the last one might have been with Sunil Pai when he was at Cloudflare.
The last one was Stacy Taylor.
Oh, yeah, Stacy Taylor. Got to give a shout-out to the Collab Lab. I'm a volunteer over there.
Five from the last is Sunil.
Yeah. Both great conversations. And but yeah, so basically we did that for Hacktoberfest, and then because like I was doing engineering there, like front end, like I wasn't dev rel there or anything, but I said,
but
like,
you were rel in the dev regardless.
I was just like well, you know, this was fun and like people seem to enjoy it. Like
I find that dev rel is something that, and I think we talked about this the other day, is that like some people, they just have it in them. It's like they're just they naturally yeah. do dev rel, whether they even realize it's a job or not. They just do it because totally. Yeah. they just exude that kind of energy, and they just get that there's a certain value to getting out there and communicating and interacting with the community.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, and you have exudability.
And I mean, if folks don't know me, I'm pretty extroverted typically,
quite exuded,
you know. I'm that person that could go. I did put antiperspirant on today though. But
excreting. Exuding.
But yeah, we're off the rails now.
No, yeah,
but so basically Ben Halpern, fellow Canadian, the creator of the Practical Dev, or dev too, he's like, yeah, you can keep doing it, you know, try to keep doing it with stuff related to forum/dev2. Don't put a lot of work into it. So like if you look like, and because I've been streaming for a while now, like my setup's a lot better, I have stuff automated and so on, but if you look at the old dev2 ones, it's like I used to basically stick the whole Discord screen in on there because like I remember this
yeah,
yeah. And it's I could have definitely made it better. It's just like I was literally told, and this is no knock on Ben, it was just like that wasn't my full time work. He's like, you can do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, you were making it work. You know, you're doing totally. What it took.
Nothing
yeah.
happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and I was really happy about all the work we did there on the stream because like when I started it with Christina,
it was one of my favorite streams. It really yeah. was.
And honestly, it was my favorite part of my week. And even streaming now, even though I love the work I do at Netlify, streaming is my favorite part of my week.
Nice.
And yeah, so it like originally there was like 700 followers on the dev2 Twitch stream. And then by the time I left, because I was doing it solo for 2021 because Christina had left at this point, I think we capped it at like about 2,200 people. So I felt pretty good about that growth.
2.3K.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. 2.3. Okay. All right.
Watch out.
Yeah. So I was pretty happy about that. Yeah, you awesome. Know, and I was kind of indirectly getting paid at dev2 to stream as well, you know, even though there was nothing official about it.
Sure.
But like when I joined Netlify, like it's not part of my job at all, so I do it on my lunch.
You should talk about your current streaming and yeah. where are you doing that at, and what kind of episodes are you bringing on?
Yeah, so on the current stream, so I've been slowly growing it, you know, because I do it once a week. I'm doing it twice a week now. Like my second day, it's
yeah, nikkit.live. You got a sweet domain that redirects to you.
Yeah, so you check that out. It's still kind of the same. Well, it's not exactly the same concept, but basically. You know, hey, like Anthony, I was wondering if you want to come on the stream, you know, like you work on the Redwood core team. I don't know anything about Redwood, you know.
This did happen. That's not
yeah,
hypothetical.
Yeah, exactly. But it's that kind of stuff. Sometimes like I'm trying to get into a cadence where on Thursdays, I'll probably just do like a side project thing, which is probably continue migrating my blog. I do have some guests on there as well on Thursdays sometimes, but that's essentially the theme of the stream, you know, and it's just, I don't know. I think streaming you know, I know it's not for everybody, but I think the benefits that I've seen is like, one, I've just met a ton of awesome people. That's the first big win.
It keeps you sharp. Like as a developer, it really forces you to have to be able to think on your feet and
True.
Problem solve and debug and be aware of how your tools work. There's like a lot of benefits in terms of just like actually making you a really sharp developer.
Mm. Yeah. And you know, like I really actually enjoy being thrown into the deep end. It doesn't bother me. I know that can definitely stress out some people, but
it's a good mindset to get into that, like being comfortable with maybe showing to the world that there's something you don't know.
Yeah. Or that you're afraid to make a mistake.
You need to figure out, just like all of us. We're all developers being thrown into problems that we may have no idea how to solve, and that's just part of the job.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, it's definitely made me sharper. It's also, I think the benefits I could see too is like just talking about something, or like, you know, I've definitely done a bunch of live coding interviews before, and so like, you know, doing something like this kind of gets you in Preps that you. Mindset to be able to do that. And you know, because like, you know, for live coding and stuff, it's like, sometimes it's not necessarily like, hey, we're just going to get it working. Sometimes like the beauty of it is it didn't work and you dug into things. And at least my experience on Twitch, you know, and I say this as a white guy in tech, so there's a million problems that I don't have. But my audience is typically, I think I've had a random weird bot account come in once, but like
hard to avoid.
Yeah. But everybody else, it's like, oh no, try that. Or, oh,
yeah, you got a chill community. Yeah. A very chill community.
So it's just fun. And there's just those benefits I mentioned. And, I think the really big thing, you know, is like, cause we talk about code a lot, you know, but the thing is, as you progress in your career, code becomes a lot less important. Like obviously
it's about the people.
Well, the people, like, you know, providing business value, like making higher level decisions potentially, or not higher level decisions, but like higher up or bigger picture things.
Yeah, bigger picture, being aware of the context of the code and what you're actually doing and what problems are you solving, as you say.
Yeah. And I mean, you still need to know how it works and how to code, obviously, but so, you know, the skill set changes as you progress through your career.
Or do you? I'm kidding. You know, actually, really quick, I just wanted to, because there was several times you guys brought up, like, you know, there's value in this. There's value in the streaming. There's value in what I do. There's value in the, you know, developer relations, all this stuff, right? And so a lot of companies out there have trouble figuring out what that ROI is for developer relations, right?
Yeah, cause it's not as clear. You can't point to a dollar amount.
You can't point to, right, exactly. And so, you know, for working for a company that is so heavily focused on and invested into DevRel, how are you guys showing your ROI? How are you determining
the ultimate DevRel question?
Yeah, I mean, no, really. Like, what are your KPIs? Like, because you said you're doing this during lunch now, right? You're not even streaming, getting paid to stream. What are your tasks?
Well, right? To be clear, I'm not part of the DevRel team at all, just to make that very clear.
And this is another interesting thing, is that you don't even officially do DevRel, but to me, like, your work is so DevRel-y.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, in terms of metrics and stuff, I can't really give you an answer to that because it's not part of my data. I have other things that I have to...
So you have different things that you're being... quote-unquote graded on in terms of what are you delivering that are separate.
Yeah, like getting back to like the streaming, it's just something I enjoy. I know it does help the company to some degree for sure.
You just do DevRel for fun. And this is what I say, like certain people just exude, like you cannot not do DevRel.
Well, he enjoys it. I mean, he said that before.
Yeah, like I think long-term, like realistically, I will land in some kind of role like that.
What's your perspective, even though you're not in it? Not even for Netlify. I'm just saying for a company, period. Like what would you think would be some great KPIs or how would you prove your value in that?
I honestly don't like metrics in general.
Well, nobody does, but the people at the top want to know these things.
That's the thing, is that the people who do exude DevRel and get it know that it doesn't have to do with metrics.
Right, right. The people who understand it, appreciate it, and see the value, absolutely. But then there's, you know, folks at the top.
I'll give you an answer that doesn't answer what you're asking.
That's the answer.
So, like, I know people in sales, and, like, even, like, not, I mean, I know people in sales at Netlify, but, like, I have friends who are in sales and stuff. And the thing is, like, and like, a Jonan, what his last name is escaping me at the moment, Scheffler, he used to head DevRel at, I at what's the observability company? New Relic. You know, I haven't talked to him in a while, but I just threw some DMs and stuff. But like, I don't know where I was going with that. But basically, it's like we're talking here right now, and like, say you're potential clients of Netlify, but like I'm or wherever.
Sure.
You know, like we're just having a conversation. Like, I don't think I should be shilling Netlify to you. I'm just like, hey, what's up? How you doing? You know,
yeah. Connection that could pay off down the line.
Yeah. Yes. You know,
and that's why it's so hard.
Where's
to
the
prove.
Trackability?
Yeah. That's why it's so hard to prove that.
Yeah. And I don't know how you, because this is not my KPIs or anything, but I don't know how you track that, because like conversation, I could have somebody at RemixConf here today, like, hey, yeah, let's hang out. Oh, let me help you with that. And I'm not even telling them to deploy it to where I work or whatever. It's just like, you know, maybe a year later I bump into them or they become a customer and they say, oh yeah, well, you know, I just happened to talk to Nick a year ago. He seemed like pretty cool. And I like what you people are doing here. And I need this now. And so like, you know, and I have no idea how you measure that. I honestly don't. And again,
it's definitely the long game though.
Yeah. And like, I feel for people that have to report, like, how do you do it? And I'm kind of glad it's not part of what I have to do right now. But
I'm glad I do this for a hobby.
Yeah, I've been lucky in that I've been doing DevRel now at three separate companies, and most of the time they look at what is your output, like what is the content you're creating, what are the connections you're making, and does it look like you're actually doing work? And I feel like that's a good kind of stopgap, whereas like you may not be able to point to specific metrics that prove this led to business value, but you can prove you're doing work and that you're producing good content and that people care about that content, and that that is in itself valuable just because you understand as a business owner what the value of this is. And so I think that this partly comes back to, not everything can be boiled down to a number. And then it's kind of like an absurdity of like capitalism that you could boil everything down to a specific number that proves you did work. And I just don't think that's always the case.
Yeah. And like, I do not have a salesperson bone in my body at all. I have a good friend of mine, Scott, who is a salesman, and he's like really good at it.
Scott?
not this Scott. Maybe Scott is a salesman. But
Scott's a salesman.
but like my buddy Scotty could be like, okay, you know, like if I wanted to go buy a new car, because I've typically bought used cars, but like if for some reason I was going to go into an actual car dealer and buy a car, I'd probably say, hey, Scotty, can you be my wingman? Because he'd be like, they would give some number out, and like because he works in sales, he'd go like, Yeah. But, you know, I know you're going to mark it up and stuff, but just throw that in, do this, do that, you know, and like, bing, bang, boom. And then like, no, I think we're good here, you know, and like, I can't operate like that. The only way I am able to operate is if I know something is literally amazing, I don't need to sell it. I just need to talk about it.
Which brings you back to the frameworks that you intuitively understand and get have value. So you're like, hey, I see this fresh framework. You intuitively get that it has value, and so you want to go to a conference and speak about it.
Yeah, and it's and side note, that talk was actually my first conference talk. I mean, like I stream all the time.
Many, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm excited to hopefully do other conferences. You know, I'm definitely comfortable speaking to people. Like I mean, through the streaming. I mean, I've done talks at meetups, and I do like. I've done lunch and learns and like stuff on virtual coffee, which we can put in the show notes.
So too. If you want Nikki T at your event, hit him up.
Yeah, no, I'd love to talk about whatever, you know, it's like, it's just a lot of fun. And
are you actively submitting CFPs anywhere?
I submitted one to React Summit, the one going on in New York, just cause I'm in Montreal, so it's not too far.
Yeah.
I submitted something about Remix for that one, but I might submit something else too. I'll see. But I think, you know, that was my first talk getting accepted, and I don't know if this is a good pattern or not, but like I gave a talk on Fresh at the Chicago JS meetup. Somebody from that community approached me, and so I gave my talk there. I spent time writing the talk, but I, you know, it's kind of slightly unpolished.
You can do something for a meetup and then kind of polish it and then bring it to a conference. I think that's actually really smart. It's a
good idea. Yeah.
And it's not – that wasn't the intention when I gave that Chicago JS meetup.
Sure, it just happened that way.
Yeah. I just have to give
it a shot. Meetups are just a great way in general for workshopping material, and I really highly recommend people speak at meetups.
And there's a lot of value there too. Totally.
Yeah. And speaking of relationships and stuff, so like Brittany Postma used to work with me at Netlify. She's at I forget where she's working at now. She's working on design systems at a company that is escaping me, but she just dropped me a message on
Provi.
Okay, yeah.
Never heard of.
Yeah, she DM'd me on Twitter. She say like, hey, I think you'd be great giving a talk at Node Congress. So she put me in contact with the organizers there, and then I submitted my CFP. You know, I still had to go through the formal process. It's not like just said, Nikki T, you're in.
But you were able to get in and submit.
But you're Nikki T. You don't just get to Walton wherever you want and say, hey, I'm Nikki T.
but I just appreciate that Brittany, one, thought of me.
Right.
And exactly. And then, like, because I wouldn't even known about that conference, and right. I wouldn't have submitted the talk then, you know? So
100%.
But yeah, I'm definitely interested in giving more talks. I would love to give an in-person talk. Because that one was remote, you know, who knows? Maybe I'll bawl my eyes on stage. Who knows? But you know, hashtag YOLO. You just got to do it.
YOLO.
YOLO.
Awesome. As we start closing it out here, are there other things you want to talk about or things you want to highlight before we start closing it out?
I just kind of wanted to talk a bit about RemixConf because we are here.
Sure, yeah, we haven't talked about that at all.
Not trying to throw you guys out, under the bus there. It's just like it was kind of my first. I say it's my first conference that I'm attending because I did. I'm kind of lying because I went to a Sitecore conference a long time ago in 2016 when I used to work in .NET. And it's not throwing shade on Sitecore or anything. It's just I wasn't.
It's different.
I was at that point. I was like, I wanted to just go into open source and just full stack JavaScript. So I was trying to get out of the .NET ecosystem. But I had this opportunity to go there. And so I'd never been in New Orleans, but it wasn't my
New Orleans.
But my head wasn't in it really. You know, I was there just to actually just go to New Orleans. And so I kind of say like that doesn't count really, but.
I went to Ethereum Amsterdam before RemixConf last year, so I could do the same thing. Right? Okay. I say RemixConf was kind of my first conference, but not really. Let's count that Web3 stuff.
Okay. But RemixConf, like it's been amazing here. Like, so well run.
Any talks that jump out? Yeah, I know you've actually watched many of the talks, which I usually don't.
Because I guess because it was my first conference, I'll do the air quotes first conference, but. I listened to most of the talks. The really amazing talk on day one was from their name's escaping me from Netflix. Did a talk. So for folks who don't know anything about Remix, like they're all about, you know, pushing the web forward, progressive enhancement first, and then you can obviously bolt on JavaScript to make things more interactive and stuff. And this talk was so amazing. It was a piano. On a web page.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people started posting stuff on Twitter about that.
So like, there's a lot of things you can do with JavaScript to just make an interactive piano. You can like read audio files. You know,
is this the Abuse the Platform?
Yeah, Abuse the Platform.
Okay, by John Jensen.
John Jensen. Yeah, it's an amazing talk because one, he had the piano working with JavaScript, but then he showed all the things you can do with just literally submitting forms and stuff. So like literally no JavaScript. And it was still the same thing. And then he also demonstrated two browsers, so multiplayer, both of them getting the sound. It was just an amazing talk. And like the title of the talk, Abuse the Platform, it was a very wild demonstration, but it was such a great way to demonstrate all the amazing capabilities of Remix. And I mean, I'm not the only one that thought that talk was amazing, I know. But
Kent was blown away, too. He tweeted about it. Wow.
Like, yeah, it was just amazing. And the fact that it was an interactive, you know, piano. Everybody knows what a piano is, obviously. What? You know, it's just like,
Yeah, that's super cool.
You know?
I'll have to go back and watch that one. That sounds like it's right up my alley.
Yeah, no, and then just, like, I enjoyed the React core team panel yesterday as well, too. You know, and I'm not dismissing any of the other talks. There are a lot of great talks. It's totally. Just you told me to pick my favorite one, and that the piano one. It's hands down.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, that's awesome. You want to give your socials and where people can follow you?
Yeah. So, Nikki T Online is pretty much my handle in most places.
You even got NikkiT.online now.
Yeah, if you're on Blue Sky page,
wonder where that is.
Yeah, it goes to my homepage, but it I'm probably gonna make a separate socials page. But basically, if you're on Blue Sky, my handle is NikkiT.online.
Yeah, on Twitter, you got the alpaca behind a blue sky.
Oh, yeah, I switched it up. Yeah, that's a side note, but my brand is alpaca.
Yeah, the ultimate Nikki T branding, the alpaca. I love it.
Yeah, but if you head to NikkiT.online or IamDeveloper.com, they all go to the same place. You can find all my socials there, LinkedIn, Polywork, Instagram, if that's your jam. But yeah. Feel free to connect. And if you're ever interested in, you know, coming on the stream to talk about a project you're working on, love to hear about it and like maybe dig into it with you. So, and I just want to say thanks to both of you. Love hanging out with you on your Twitter spaces. It's the first time I get to hang out on the podcast.
Yeah,
with you,
man. So. Thank you so much for joining. It's a really great convo.
For real. We had fun.
Yeah.
All right. And I think that'll close it out here.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks, y'all. Appreciate you. See you in the next one. Yeah. Peace.